he felt about what he'd just told me. In return, I didn't know what to say. It was like hearing a dark fairy tale late at night with heavy eyes. The whole moment felt dreamlike, fluttering in and out of focus, yet so very real. I knew Jev was telling the truth, not because his history of fallen angels and Nephilim matched Scott's, but because every last word rattled me, shaking loose fragments of my memory I'd thought were gone forever. "I almost brought you here once," Jev said. "The Nephil whose safe house you broke into tonight interfered." I didn't have to be honest with Jev, but I decided to take the risk. "I know Hank Miller is the Nephil you're talking about. He's the reason I went to the safe house tonight. I wanted to know what he was hiding inside. Scott told me if we got enough dirt on him, we could figure out what he's planning and devise a way to bring him down." Something I interpreted as pity flashed across Jev's eyes. "Hank isn't an ordinary Nephil, Nora." "I know. Scott told me he's building an army. He wants to overthrow fallen angels so they can't possess Nephilim bodies anymore. I know he's powerful and connected. What I don't understand is how you're involved. Why were you at the safe house tonight?" Jev said nothing for a moment. "Hank and I have a business arrangement. It's not unusual for me to pay him a visit." He was being deliberately vague. I didn't know whether, even after my gesture of honesty, he was unwilling to be open with me, or whether he was trying to protect me. He let go of a long sigh. "We need to talk." He took my elbow, leading me deeper into the perfect darkness beneath the shed. We moved downward, twisting through corridors and around bends. At last, Jev slowed, opened a door, and picked up something from the ground. A match hissed to life, and he held it against the wick of a candle. "Welcome to my place." Compared to utter darkness, the candlelight was surprisingly bright. We stood at the opening of a black granite foyer that led to a vast room beyond, also carved from black granite. Silk rugs in chromatic shades of navy, gray, and black decorated the floors. The furniture was sparse, but the pieces Jev had selected were sleek and contemporary, with clean lines and artistic appeal. "Wow," I said.
"I don't bring many people down here. It's not something I want to share with everyone. I like the privacy and seclusion."
He definitely had both, I thought, looking around the cave-like studio. Under the candlelight, the granite walls and floors glittered as though flecked with diamonds. As I continued my slow exploration, Jev walked the room, lighting candles.
"Kitchen to the left," he said. "Bedroom in the back."
I tossed a coy glance over my shoulder. "Why, Jev, are you flirting with me?" He watched me with dark eyes. "I'm starting to wonder if you're trying to distract me from our previous conversation." I trailed my finger over the only heirloom piece in the room, a full-length silver-plated mirror that looked like it belonged in a medieval French chateau. My mom would be truly impressed. Jev dropped into a French deco-inspired black leather sofa, spreading his arms along the back.
"I'm not the distraction in the room."
"Oh, and what might that be?" I felt his eyes devour me as I moved around the room. He assessed me head to toe without blinking, and a hot ache shivered through me. A kiss would have been less intimate. Shoving down the warmth his gaze stirred inside me, I stopped to take in a breathtaking oil painting. The colors were so vivid, the details so violent.
"The fall of Phaeton," he informed me. "The Greek sun god Helios had a son, Phaeton, by a mortal woman. Each day Helios drove a chariot across the sky. Phaeton tricked his father into letting him drive the chariot, even though Phaeton wasn't strong enough or skilled enough to handle the horses. As expected, the horses ran wild and fell to earth, burning everything in their path."
He waited, drawing my eyes to him.
"Surely you're aware of the effect you have on me."
"Now you're teasing me."
"I enjoy teasing you, true. But there are some things I never joke about."
All banter left him and his eyes turned serious. Trapped in Jev's gaze, I accepted what had so plainly been laid out before me. He was a fallen angel. The power that vibrated off him was different from what I felt around Scott. Stronger and sharper. Even now the air whipped with energy. Every molecule in my body was ultra-sensitive to his presence, aware of his movements. "I know you're a fallen angel," I said. "I know you force Nephilim to swear an oath of fealty. You possess their bodies. In this war that's going on, you're on the opposite side from Scott. No wonder you don't like him."
"You're remembering."
"Not nearly enough. If you're a fallen angel, why do business with Hank and Nephil? Aren't you supposed to be mortal enemies?"
I sounded more sharp than I intended. I wasn't sure how to feel about the idea of Jev as a fallen angel, a bad guy. To keep this revelation from pushing me over the edge, I reminded myself I'd figured this all out before, once upon a time. If I'd handled it then, I could handle it now. Once again, pity flashed across his expression.
About Hank.
He dragged his hands down his face. What about him? I stared at him, trying to figure out what he was having such a difficult time telling me. His features carried such deep sympathy, I automatically stiffened, bracing for the worst. Jev stood, walked to the wall, leaned an arm against it. His sleeves were pushed to his elbows, his head bowed. I want to know everything, I told him, starting with you. I want to remember us. How did we meet? What did we mean to each other? After that, I want you to tell me everything about Hank. Even if you're worried, I won't like what you have to say. Help me remember. I can't go on like this. I can't move forward until I know what I left behind. I'm not afraid of Hank, I added.
I'm afraid of what he's capable of. He doesn't draw the line. He pushes as far as he can. Worst of all, he can't be trusted with anything.
He hesitated.
I'll come clean. I'll tell you everything, but only because Hank double-crossed me. You're not supposed to be in this anymore. I did everything I could to leave you out of it. Hank gave me his word he'd stay away from you. Imagine my surprise, then, when you told me earlier tonight that he's putting the moves on your mom. If he's back in your life, it's because he's up to something, which means you're not safe, we're back to square one, and coming clean doesn't put you in any more danger.
My pulse hammered through my veins, my alarm running deeper than bone. Hank, just as I'd suspected, everything led back to him. Help me remember, Jev.
Is that what you want?
He searched my face with the need to know that I was absolutely certain. Yes, I said, sounding braver than I felt. Jev lowered himself onto the edge of the sofa. He unbuttoned his shirt carefully. Even though I was taken aback, instinct told me to be patient. Bracing his elbows on his knees, Jev hung his head between his naked shoulders. Every muscle in his body was rigid. For one moment, he looked like Phaedon from his painting, each sinew etched and chiseled. I took one step closer, then two. The guttering candlelight flickered across his body. I sucked in a breath. Two jagged stripes of torn flesh marred his otherwise flawless back. The wounds were raw and red and wrung my stomach into a knot. I couldn't imagine the pain he was in. I couldn't imagine what had happened to create such brutal gouges.
Touch them, Jev said, looking up at me with nervousness rising to the surface of those unreadable black eyes. Concentrate on what you want to know.
I don't understand.
The night I drove you away from the 7-Eleven, you ripped my shirt and touched my wing scars. You saw one of my memories.
I blinked. That wasn't a hallucination? Hank, Jev, the caged girl, they were from Jev's memory? Any doubt I'd been dragging around vanished. Wing scars, of course, because he was a fallen angel. And even though I didn't know the physics behind it, when I touched his scars, I saw things no one else could possibly know, except Jev. I finally had what I wanted, a window to the past, and fear threatened to get the better of me.
I should warn you that if you go inside a memory that includes you, things will get complicated,
he said.
You might see a double of yourself. You and my memory of you could be there at the same time, and you'd be forced to watch the events as an invisible bystander. The other scenario is that you'll transfer into your own version of the memory, meaning you might experience my memory from your own point of view. You won't see a double if that happens. You'll be the only version of yourself in the memory. I've heard of both happening, but the first is more common.
My hands trembled. I'm scared.
I'll give you 5 minutes. If you haven't come back, I'll pull your hands off my scars. That will break the connection.
I bit my lip. This is your chance, I told myself. Don't run away, not when you've made it this far. The truth is scary, but knowing nothing is crippling. You, of all people, understand that. Give me a half hour, I told Jev firmly. Then I cleared my mind, trying to calm my racing thoughts. I didn't have to understand everything right now. I only had to take a leap of faith. I held my hand out part of the way. I squeezed my eyes shut, summoning courage. I was grateful when Jev's hand closed over mine, guiding me the rest of the way. Chapter 20. My first conscious thought was of being nailed down. No, nailed inside. Locked in the snuggest of coffins, tangled in a net, defenseless and dictated by another body, a body that looked like my own, same hands, same hair, identical down to the finest detail, but one I had no control over. A strange phantom body that acted against my will, dragging me into its tide. My second thought was, Patch. Patch was kissing me in a way that terrified me even more than the phantom body and its unbreakable hold over me. His mouth everywhere. The rain, warm and sweet. The swell of distant thunder. And his body taking up space, standing so very close, radiating heat. Patch. Astonished and shaken, I clawed at the memory. I begged to be let out. I gasped as if coming up from a lengthy and punishing stay underwater. At the same time, my eyes flew open. "What is it?" Jev asked, grasping me protectively by the shoulders as I slumped against him. We were back in his granite studio, the same candles flickering along the walls. The familiarity of it flooded me with relief. I was terrified of being trapped down there, terrified of the sensation of being held captive in a body that I couldn't command. "Your memory was of me," I choked. "But there wasn't a double. I was trapped inside my body, but I couldn't control it. I couldn't move it. It was terrifying."
"What did you see?"
he asked, his body tense enough to be made of stone. One hard push in the wrong direction, and he might well shatter. "We were above here, in the shed. When I said your name, I didn't say Jev. I called you Patch. And you were kissing me." I was too shocked to think about blushing. Jev smoothed hair off my face, stroking my cheek.
"Nothing is wrong," he murmured. "Back then you knew me as Patch. That was the name I was going under when we met. I dropped the name when I lost you. I've been going by Jev ever since."
I felt stupid for crying, but I couldn't stop myself. Jev was Patch, my old boyfriend. It suddenly made sense. No wonder no one had recognized Jev's name. He'd changed it after I disappeared. "I kissed you back," I said, still crying softly. "In the memory." The tightness in his face softened.
"That bad?"
I wondered if I could ever tell him just what his kiss had done to me. It was so pleasurable it had single-handedly frightened me out of his memory. To avoid having to answer him, I said, "You told me earlier that you tried to bring me here to your home once before, but Hank stopped us. I think that was the memory I saw, but I didn't see Hank. I didn't make it that far. I broke the connection. I couldn't handle being inside my body but not being able to control it. I wasn't prepared for just how real it would feel."
"The girl in control of your body was you," he reminded me. "You in the past, before you lost your memory."
I jumped up, pacing the room. "I have to go back."
"Nora,
I have to face Hank, and I can't face him here until I've faced him in there," I said, thrusting my finger at Jev's scars. "And face yourself," I thought. "You have to face the part of you that knows the truth." Jev gave me a measured look.
"Do you want me to pull you out?"
"No. This time, I'm going all the way." The moment I arrived back inside Jev's memory, I felt a switch being thrown, and the next thing I knew, I was reliving the flashback through the eyes of the girl I'd been before my memory was damaged. Her body overtook mine, and her thoughts overshadowed my own. I breathed through the panic, opening myself up to her. To me. Outside, the rain made a metallic ping as it pattered the shed. Patch and I were both wet from it, and he sucked a drop of rainwater from my lip. I hung my fingertips on the waistband of his jeans and tugged him closer. Our mouths slipped over each other, a warm distraction from the chill in the air. He nuzzled my neck affectionately.
"I love you. I am happier right now than I ever remember being."
I was about to answer when a man's voice, unaccountably familiar, carried out of the darkest part of the shed.
"How very touching. Seize the angel."
A handful of overly tall young men, undoubtedly Nephilim, rushed out of the shadows and surrounded Patch, twisting his arms behind his back. I hardly had time to absorb what was happening when Patch's voice broke into my thoughts as clearly as if he'd spoken in my ear.
"When I start fighting, run. Take the jeep. Don't go home. Stay in the jeep and keep driving until I find you."
The man who lingered at the back of the shed, commanding the others, stepped forward into the eerie carnival light slicing through the shed's many cracks. He was unnaturally young for his age, with crisp blue eyes and a ruthless curl to his mouth.
"Mr. Miller," I whispered.
How could he possibly be here? After everything I'd gone through this night, a near-fatal attempt on my life, learning the sordid truth about my heritage, and overcoming it all to be with Patch. Now this? It didn't seem real.
"Let me introduce myself properly," he said. "I'm the Black Hand. I knew your father, Harrison, well. I'm glad he's not here now to see you debasing yourself with one of the devil's brood."
He wagged his head at me.
"You're not the girl I thought you'd grow up to be, Nora. Fraternizing with the enemy, making a mockery of your heritage. But I can forgive that."
He paused with significance.
"Tell me, Nora, was it you who killed my dear friend and associate, Chancy Langer?"
My blood ran cold. I was caught between the impulse to lie and the knowledge that it wouldn't do any good. He knew I'd killed Chancy. The cold twist of his mouth frowned at me in judgment.
"Now," Pat shouted, cutting into my thoughts. "Run!"
I bolted for the shed door, but I only made it a few steps before Nafeel hooked my elbow. Just as fast, he yanked my other arm behind my back. I tried to wrench free, every movement a desperate lunge for the shed door. Hank Miller's footfalls crossed the shed behind me.
"I owe this to Chauncey."
Any chill I'd felt from the rain had vanished. Rivulets of sweat trickled beneath my shirt.
"We shared a vision, one we intended to see through to the end," Hank continued. "Who would have guessed you, of all people, would be the one to nearly destroy it?"
A slew of spiteful responses sprang to mind, but I didn't dare set off Hank. My only asset was time, and I needed to keep it on my side. The Nafeel spun me around just as Hank retrieved a long, thin dagger from the waist of his pants.
"Touch my back!"
Patch's voice cut through the panic clanging between my ears. Frantically, I looked sideways at him.
"Go inside my memory. Touch the place where my wings fuse into my back."
He nodded, urging me to act.
"Easier said than done," I thought at him, even though I knew he couldn't hear me.
A span of 5 or 6 feet separated us, and both of us were held captive by Nephilim.
"Let go of me," I snapped at the Nephil pinning my arms. "We both know I'm not going anywhere. I can't outrun all of you."
The Nafeel glanced at Hank, who confirmed my request with a slight nod. Then he sighed, almost bored.
"I'm sorry to do this, Nora, but justice must be served. Chauncey would have done the same for me."
I rubbed the insides of my elbows, my skin burning from where the Nafeel had gripped me.
"Justice? What about family? I'm your daughter by blood,
and nothing more."
"You're a blight on my heritage," he dismissed. "A turncoat. A humiliation."
I gave him the blackest look I had inside me, even though my stomach roiled in fear.
"Are you here to avenge Chauncey, or is this an attempt to save face? Couldn't handle your daughter dating a fallen angel and embarrassing you in front of your little Nephilim army? Am I getting warm?"
So much for not setting him off. Hank frowned slightly.
"Think you could get inside my memory before he snaps your neck?"
Patch hissed to my mind. I didn't look at Patch, afraid I'd lose my resolve if I did. We both knew escaping into his memory wasn't going to get me out of here. It would merely transport my mind into his past. And I supposed that was what Patch wanted, for me to be in some other place when Hank killed me. Patch knew this was the end, and he was saving me the pain of being conscious at my own execution. A ridiculous image of an ostrich with its head in the sand came distinctly to mind. If I was going to die in the next few moments, it wouldn't be before I said the words that I hoped would haunt Hank for the rest of eternity.
"I guess it's a good thing you chose to keep Marcy as your daughter instead of me," I said. "She's cute, popular, dates the right boys, and is too dumb to question anything you do. But I know for a fact the dead can come back. I saw my dad earlier tonight, my real dad."
The frown on Hank's face deepened.
"If he can visit me, there's nothing preventing me from visiting Marcy, or your wife. And I won't stop there. I know you're dating my mom on the sly again. I'll tell her the truth about you, dead or alive. How many dates do you think you can squeeze in before I let her know you killed me?"
That was all I had time to say before Patch rammed his knee into the gut of the Nafeel holding his right arm. The Nafeel slumped, and Patch swung his free fist at the nose of the Nafeel pinning his left arm. There was an awful crunch and a blubbering yowl. I ran for Patch, throwing myself against him.
"Hurry," he said, forcing my hand up the back of his shirt.
I splayed my hand blindly on Patch's back, hoping I'd make contact with the place where his wings fused into his skin. His wings were made of spiritual matter, and I couldn't see or feel them, but it only made sense that they'd span a good portion of his back and be hard to miss. Someone, Hank or one of the other Nephilim, tore at my shoulders, but I only slipped a little. Patch's arms were around me, locking me against him. With no time to spare, I plunged my hand a second time up the smooth, toned skin of Patch's back. Where were his wings? He kissed my forehead roughly and murmured something unintelligible. There was no time for more. A searing white light exploded at the back of my mind. The very next moment, I was suspended in a dark universe speckled with pricks of colorful light. I knew I had to move toward any of the millions of light pricks. Each one stored a memory, but they seemed miles away. I heard Hank shouting, and I knew it meant I hadn't fully crossed over. Maybe my hand was close to the base of Patch's wings, but not close enough. I couldn't block out the flashing images of all the horrible, painful ways Hank could end my life, and I fought my way through the darkness, determined to see Patch in his memories one last time before it was all over. Tears stained my vision. The end. I didn't want this to be that moment, stealing up behind me with no warning. I had so much more I wanted to tell Patch. Did he know how much he meant to me? What we had together, it had barely started. Everything could not come crashing down now. I summoned a picture of Patch's face. The image I chose was of the very first time we met. His hair was long, curling over his ears, and his eyes looked like they didn't miss a thing, perceiving the secrets and desires of my soul. I remembered the startled expression on his face when I'd stormed into Beau's arcade, upsetting his pool game, and demanded that he help me finish our biology assignment. I remembered his wolfish smile, daring me to play along, as he'd moved to kiss me that very first time in my kitchen. Patch was shouting, too, not ahead of me in his memories, but far below me in the shed. Two words rose above the others, sounding distorted in my ears, as though they had traveled a great distance. Deal. Compromise. I frowned, straining to hear more. What was Patch saying? I suddenly feared that whatever it was, I wouldn't like it. No, I shouted, needing to stop Patch. I tried to propel myself back to the shed, but I was in a vacuum, floating idly. Patch, what are you telling him? I felt a strange tug to my body as if I'd been latched behind my spine. The sound of shouting voices swirled shut behind me as I hurtled toward a blinding light and inside the corridors of Patch's memory. Again. I arrived inside the second memory in an instant. I stood once again in the damp chill of the shed, crowded with Hank, his Nephilim men, and Jev, and I could only gather that this second memory was beginning precisely where the last one had ended. I felt that familiar switch being thrown, but this time I wasn't locked inside a version of myself from the past. My thoughts and actions belonged to the present me. I was now a double, an invisible bystander, watching Jev's version of this moment as he remembered it. Jev held a sluggish version of my body. My body was limp except for my hand, which was splayed on his back. My eyes were rolled back to whites, and I vaguely wondered if I would remember both memories when I pulled out entirely.
"Ah, yes, I'd heard about that trick," Hank said. "It's true, I gather. She's inside your memory as we speak, and all this by simply touching your wings."
Looking at Hank, I felt a surge of helplessness. Had I just said he was my father? I had. I felt a compulsion to beat my fists against his chest until he denied it, but the truth burned like a fever inside me. I could loathe him all I wanted, but it didn't change the fact that his vile blood coursed through my veins. Harrison Gray might have given me all the love of a parent, but Hank Miller had given me life.
"I'll make a deal," Jev said roughly. "Something you want in exchange for Nora's life."
Hank's lips twitched.
"What could you possibly have that I want?"
"You're building a Nephilim army with the hope of overthrowing fallen angels as early as this Heshvan. Don't look surprised. I'm not the only angel who knows what you're up to. Bands of fallen angels are forming alliances, and they're going to make their Nephilim vassals regret thinking they could ever break free. It's not going to be a pretty Heshvan for any Nephil who bears the Black Hand's mark of allegiance. And that's only the tip of the iceberg when it comes to what they have in store. You're never going to pull this off without a man on the inside."
Hank gestured to dismiss his men. "Leave me alone with the angel. Take the girl outside. You're kidding if you think I'm letting her out of my sight, Jev said.
Hank relented with an amused snort.
Very well. Keep her while you can.
As soon as the Nephilim exited, Hank said,
Keep talking.
Let Nora live and I'll spy for you.
Hank's blonde eyebrows swept up.
My, my. Your feelings for her run deeper than I thought.
His gaze raked my unconscious figure.
I dare say she's not worth it. Sadly, I don't care what you and your guardian angel friends think of my plans. I'm far more interested in fallen angels, what they're thinking, any countermeasures they might attempt. You're not one of them anymore, so how do you plan to be privy to their dealings? Let me worry about that.
Hank considered Jev with a discriminating eye.
All right, he said at last. I'm intrigued.
A careless shrug.
I'm not the one who stands to lose. I take it you'd have me swear an oath.
Wouldn't have it any other way, Jev said coolly. Drawing the dagger once again from the waist of his pants, Hank made a slash across the palm of his left hand.
I swear my oath to let the girl live. If I break my vow, I plead that I may die and return to the dust from which I was created.
Jev accepted the blade and sliced his hand next. Making a fist, he shook loose a few drops of a blood-like substance.
I swear to feed you all the information I can on what fallen angels are planning. If I break my vow, I will voluntarily lock myself in the chains of hell.
The two of them clasped hands, mingling their blood. By the time they pulled free, their wounds had healed perfectly.
Keep in touch, Hank said with irony, dusting his shirt as though being in the shed had somehow sullied him.
He raised his cell phone to his ear, and when he caught Jev watching, he explained,
Making sure my car is ready.
However, when he spoke into the phone, his words adopted a hardened undertone.
Send my men in, all of them. I want the girl taken away.
Jev went still. Even as the sound of running feet approached the shed, he said,
What's this?
I swore an oath to let her live, Hank informed him. When I release her is up to me, and you. She's yours after you've given me enough information to guarantee I can overthrow fallen angels by Heshvan. Consider Nora insurance.
Jev's eyes flicked to the shed door, but Hank interjected smoothly.
Don't go down that road. You're outnumbered 20-1. We'd both hate to see Nora needlessly injured in a scuffle. Play this smart. Hand her over.
Jev grabbed Hank's sleeve, jerking him close.
If you take her away, I will see to it that your corpse fertilizes the ground we're standing on, he said, his voice more venomous than I'd ever heard it.
Nothing in Hank's expression hinted at fear. If anything, he appeared almost smug.
My corpse. Is that my cue to laugh?
Hank opened the shed door, and his Nephilim men thundered in.
Just like a dream, Jev's memories ended almost before they began. There was a moment of disorientation, and then the granite studio came into focus. Jev stood silhouetted against the candlelight. The flame gave just enough illumination to bring a severe glint to his eyes. A dark angel, indeed.
Okay, I whispered, haunted by a sensation of lingering vertigo.
Okay, then.
He smiled, but his expression was uncertain.
Okay, then, that's it?
I turned my face up to his. I could hardly look at him the same way. I was crying without realizing I'd started.
You made a deal with Hank.
You saved my life.
Why would you do that for me?
Angel, he murmured, clasping my face between his hands.
I don't think you understand the lengths I would go to if it means keeping you here with me.
My throat choked with emotion. I couldn't find words.
Hank Miller, a man who'd stood quietly in the shadows for years, was now revealed to have given me life, only to try to end it. And Jev was the reason I was alive.
Hank Miller,
the man who'd stood in my house on numerous occasions as if he belonged, who'd smiled and kissed my mom, who'd spoken to me with warmth and familiarity.
He kidnapped me, I said, piecing it all together.
I'd suspected it before, but Jev's memories filled in the gaps with shocking clarity. He swore the oath not to kill me, but he held me hostage to make sure you were motivated to spy for him. 3 whole months. He strung everyone along for 3 whole months. All to get his hands on information about fallen angels. He let my mom believe I was as good as dead. Of course he had. He'd proven he had no qualms when it came to getting his hands dirty. He was a powerful Nephil, capable of an arsenal of mind tricks. And after dumping me in the cemetery, he'd used them to keep my memories far, far away. After all, he couldn't release me and have me shouting his diabolical deeds to the world. I hate him. Words can't express how angry I am. I want him to pay. I want him dead, I said with hardened resolution. The mark on your wrist, Jev said. It's not a birthmark. I've seen it twice before. On my old Nephil vassal, a man named Chauncey Langer. Hank Miller also has the mark, Nora. The mark links you to their bloodline like an outward expression of a genetic marker or DNA sequence. Hank is your biological father. I know, I said, shaking my head with bitterness. He laced his hand in mine, brushing a kiss across my knuckles. I was acutely aware of the pressure of his mouth, little tingles swimming under my skin. You remember? I heard myself say it in the memory, but I must have already known. I wasn't surprised. I was angry. I don't remember when I first knew it. I pressed my thumb into the mark, slashing my inner wrist. But I feel it. There's a disconnect between my mind and my heart, but I feel the truth. They say when people lose their vision, their hearing becomes sharper. I've lost part of my memory, but maybe my intuition is stronger. We considered this in silence. What Jeb didn't know was that my true parentage wasn't the only piece of information my intuition was making a judgment on. I don't want to talk about Hank. Not right now. I want to talk about something else I saw. Or rather, I should say something I discovered. He regarded me with equal parts curiosity and wariness. A deep breath. I learned that I was either crazy in love with you, or putting on the best performance of my life. His eyes remained carefully guarded, but I thought I saw a flicker of hope. Which one are you leaning toward? Only one way to find out. First, I need to know what happened between you and Marcy. This is one of those times when giving me full disclosure is in your best interest, I warned. Marcy said you were her summer fling. Scott told me she played a role in our breakup. All that's missing is your version. Jeb stroked his chin. Do I look like a summer fling? I tried to picture Jeb playing frisbee at the beach or lathering up in sunscreen. I tried to imagine him buying Marcy ice cream on the boardwalk and patiently listening to her endless chatter. Anyway I tried it, the image brought a smile to my face. Point taken, I said. So spill. Marcy was an assignment. I hadn't gone rogue yet. I still had my wings, which made me a guardian angel, taking orders from the archangels, and they wanted me to keep an eye on her. She's Hank's daughter, which equates to danger by association. I kept her safe, but it wasn't a pleasant experience. I've done my best to put the memory behind me. So nothing happened? His mouth tipped up slightly. I almost shot her once or twice, but the excitement ends there. Missed opportunity, he shrugged. There's always next time. Still want to talk about Marcy? I held his steady gaze, shaking my head no. I don't feel like talking, I confessed quietly. I rose to my feet, pulling him up with me, a little dizzy from the audacity of what I was about to do. I was all slippery emotions inside, able to grasp only two of them. Curiosity and desire. He held perfectly still. Angel, he said roughly. He stroked his thumb across my cheek, but I pulled back slightly. Don't rush this. If there's any memory of being with you left inside me, I can't force it. That was half the truth. The other half I kept to myself. I'd been secretly fantasizing about this moment since I'd first seen Jev. I'd created 100 variations of it in my head since then, but my imagination had never come close to making me feel the way I did right now. I felt an irresistible draw, luring me closer, closer. No matter what happened, I didn't ever want to forget how it felt with Jev. I wanted to imprint his touch, his taste, even the scent of him so solidly inside me that no one could take them away from me. I slid my hands up his torso, memorizing every ripple of muscle.
I inhaled the same scents I had that first night in the Tahoe. Leather, spice, mint. I traced the planes of his face with my fingers, curiously exploring his sharp, almost Italian features. All through this, Jeff didn't move, enduring my touch with his eyes closed. "Angel," he repeated in a strained voice. "Not yet." I spread my fingers through his hair, feeling it flutter through them. I committed every last detail to memory. The bronze shade of his skin, the confident line of his posture, the seductive length of his eyelashes. He wasn't clean lines and perfect symmetries, and I found him even more interesting for it. "Done stalling," I told myself at last. Leaning in, I closed my eyes. His mouth opened under mine, his tightly reined control shuddering through his body. His arms wrapped around me, securing me against him. He kissed me harder, and the depth of my response unnerved me. My legs felt wobbly and heavy. I sank into Jeff, and he backed us slowly down the wall until I came to straddle his lap. Brightness lit up inside me, and the heat of it consumed every hollow corner. A hidden world opened between us, one that was as frightening as it was familiar. I knew it was real. I'd kissed like this before. I'd kissed Patch like this before. I couldn't remember calling him anything but Jeff, but somehow Patch just felt right. The hot deliciousness of being with him came roaring back, threatening to swallow me whole. I pulled away first, trailing my tongue along my lower lip. Patch made a low, questioning sound. "Not bad?" I bent my head toward his. "Practice makes perfect." Chapter 21. My eyes fluttered open, and the room took shape. The lights were off, the air was cool. The most luxurious and delicious fabric caressed my skin. The memory of last night came back to me in a whirlwind. Patch and I had made out. I vaguely recollected muttering something to him about being too exhausted to drive. I'd fallen asleep at Patch's. I wrestled myself up to sitting. "My mom is gonna kill me," I blurted to no one in particular. For one thing, it was a school night. For another, I'd missed curfew by a mile and never bothered to call and explain why. Patch sat in a chair in the corner, his chin propped on his fist. "Already taken care of. I called V. She agreed to vouch for you. The story she gave your mom is that the two of you were at her house watching the 5-hour version of Pride and Prejudice. You lost track of time, you fell asleep first, and rather than wake you up, V's mom agreed to let you sleep over."
"You called V? And she agreed? No questions asked?"
It didn't sound like V at all, especially the new V who'd developed a death wish for the male race in general.
"It might have been slightly more difficult than that."
His enigmatic tone clicked in my brain.
"You mind-tricked her?"
"Between asking permission and begging forgiveness, I lean toward the latter."
"She's my best friend. You can't mind-trick her."
Even though I was still angry at V for lying about Patch, she must have had her reasons. And while I didn't approve and intended to get to the bottom of it very, very soon, she meant the world to me. Patch had crossed a line.
"You were exhausted, and you looked peaceful sleeping in my bed."
"That's because your bed has some kind of spell on it," I said, less testily than I intended.
"I could sleep here forever. Satin sheets?" I guessed.
"Silk."
Black silk sheets. Who knew how much they'd cost? One thing was certain, they had a hypnotic quality I found very distracting. "Swear you won't ever mind trick V again."
"Done,"
he said easily, now that he'd gotten away with it. Beg forgiveness sounded about right. "I don't suppose you have an explanation for why both V and my mom have consistently denied knowing you exist. In fact, the only two people who've confessed to remembering you at all are Marcy and Scott."
"V dated Rickson. After Hank kidnapped you, I erased her memory of Rickson. He used her and put her through a lot of pain. He put everyone through a lot of pain. It was easier in the long run if I did my best to make everyone forget him. The alternative was letting your friends and family hang their hopes on an arrest that was never going to happen. When I went to wipe V's mind, she put up a fight. To this day, she's angry. She doesn't know why, but it's rooted inside her. Erasing someone's memory isn't as easy as it sounds. It's like trying to pick all the chocolate chips out of a cookie. It's never going to be perfect. Pieces get left behind. unexplainable beliefs that feel compelling and familiar. V can't remember what I did to her, but she knows not to trust me. She can't remember Rickson, but she knows there's a guy out there who caused her a lot of grief. It explained V's suspicion towards guys and my instant aversion to Hank. Our minds might have been wiped clean, but a few crumbs got left behind. Might want to cut her some slack, Patch suggested. She has your back. Honesty is a good thing, but so is loyalty. In other words, let her off the hook. He shrugged. Your call. V had looked me in the eye and lied without reservation. It wasn't a light offense. But the thing was, I knew how she felt. She'd had her memory tampered with, and it wasn't a good feeling. Vulnerable didn't begin to describe it. V lied to protect me. Was I that different? I hadn't told her a thing about fallen angels or Nephilim, and I'd used the same excuse. I could either hold V to a double standard, or I could take Patch's advice and let it go. And my mom? Gonna vouch for her, too? I asked. She thinks I had something to do with your abduction. Better me than Hank, he said, his tone cooling. If Hank thought she knew the truth, he'd do something about it. He was putting it lightly. I wouldn't put it past Hank to hurt her if it meant getting what he wanted. All the more reason to keep her in the dark, for the time being. I didn't want to feel a shred of empathy for Hank, to humanize him in any way, but I found myself wondering what kind of man he'd been when he first fell in love with my mom. Had he always been evil? Or in the beginning had he cared about us, and over time he'd built his entire world around his Nephilim mission, and it had taken precedence? I abruptly ended my speculations. Hank was evil now, and that was what mattered. He'd kidnapped me, and I was going to make certain he was held accountable. I said, "You mean the arrest was never going to happen because Rickson's in hell now?" Literally in hell, by the sound of it. He confirmed this with a nod, but his eyes darkened a shade. I supposed Patch didn't like to talk about hell. I doubted any fallen angel did. "In your memory, I saw you agree to spy on fallen angels for Hank," I said. Patch nodded. "What they're planning and when. I meet weekly with Hank to share information." "What if fallen angels find out you're selling secrets behind their backs?" "I'm hoping they don't." I wasn't comforted by his casual attitude. "What would they do to you?" "I've been in worse situations and managed to pull through." The edges of his mouth tilted higher. "All this time and you still don't have any faith in me." "Could you be serious for 2 seconds? He leaned over and kissed my hand and spoke to me with sincerity. "They'd cast me into hell. They're supposed to let the archangels handle that, but it doesn't always work that way."
"Explain," I said firmly. He slouched back with a certain lazy arrogance.
"Humans are forbidden from killing each other. It's the law. But people are murdered every day. My world isn't much different. For every law, there's someone out there willing to break it. I won't pretend to be innocent. 3 months ago, I chained Rickson in hell, even though I had no authority other than my own sense of justice."
"You chained Rickson in hell?"
Patch eyed me with curiosity. "He had to pay. He tried to kill you."
"Scott told me about Rickson, but he didn't know who chained him in hell, or how it was done. I'll let him know he has you to thank."
"I'm not interested in the half-breed's gratitude, but I can tell you how it's done. When the archangels banish a fallen angel from heaven and rip out his wings, they keep one feather for themselves. The feather is meticulously filed and preserved. If the occasion arises where a fallen angel needs to be chained in hell, the archangels retrieve his feather and burn it. It's a symbolic act with inescapable results. The term burn in hell isn't a figure of speech."
"You had one of Rickson's feathers?"
"Before he went behind my back, he was the closest thing I had to a brother. I knew he had a feather, and I knew where he kept it. I knew everything about him. And because of it, I didn't give him an impersonal send-off."
Though I suspected he meant to remain impassive, Patch's jaw contracted.
"I dragged him down to hell and burned the feather in front of him."
His recounting of the story raised every hair on my scalp. Even if V betrayed me so blatantly, I wasn't sure I had it in me to make her suffer the way he had clearly made Rickson suffer. Suddenly I understood why Patch had taken the subject so personally. Breaking away from the gruesome picture Patch had painted in my mind, I recalled the feather I'd found in the cemetery. "Are these feathers floating around everywhere? Can anyone stumble across one?"
Patch shook his head. "The archangels keep one feather on record. A few fallen angels like Rickson make it to Earth with a feather or two intact. When that happens, the fallen angel makes damn sure his feather doesn't fall into the wrong hands."
The suggestion of a smile lifted the corners of his mouth.
"And you thought we weren't sentimental."
What happens to the rest of the feathers?
They rapidly deteriorate on the way down. Falling from heaven isn't a smooth ride.
What about you? Any secret feathers locked away?
He cocked an eyebrow. Plotting my downfall?
I smiled back, despite the seriousness of the subject.
A girl's gotta keep her options open. Hate to disappoint, but no feathers. I came to Earth stripped naked.
I said as casually as I could, but I felt my face growing warm at the picture that one little word had planted in my brain. Naked thoughts were not good thoughts to have while I was locked away in Patch's ultra-secret, ultra-swanky bedroom.
I like you in my bed, Patch said. I rarely pull down the covers. I rarely sleep. I could get used to this picture.
Are you offering me a permanent place?
Already put a spare key in your pocket.
I patted my pocket. Sure enough, something small and hard was snug inside.
How charitable of you. I'm not feeling very charitable now,
he said, holding my eyes, his voice deepening with a gravelly edge.
I missed you, Angel. Not one day went by that I didn't feel you missing from my life. You haunted me to the point that I began to believe Hank had gone back on his oath and killed you. I saw your ghost in everything. I couldn't escape you, and I didn't want to. You tortured me, but it was better than losing you.
Why didn't you tell me everything that night in the alley with Gabe? You were so angry. I shook my head, remembering every caustic word he'd directed at me. I thought you hated me.
After Hank released you, I spied on you to make sure you were okay, but I swore to end my involvement with you for your own safety. I'd made my decision and I thought I could deal with it. I tried to convince myself there was nothing left for us. But when I saw you that night in the alley, my argument fell apart. I wanted you to remember me the way I couldn't stop thinking about you. But you couldn't. I'd made sure of it.
His gaze dropped to his hands, clasped loosely between his knees.
I owe you an apology, he said quietly. Hank erased your memory to keep you from remembering what he did to you. But I agreed to it. I told him to erase it back far enough that you wouldn't remember me, either.
I snapped my eyes to Patches.
You agreed to what? I wanted to give you your life back. Before fallen angels, before Nephilim, before me. I thought that was the only way you'd get through the worst of what happened. I don't think either of us will deny that I've complicated your life. I've tried to make it better, but things haven't always gone my way. I thought it through and came to the difficult decision the best thing for your recovery and your future was for me to walk away.
Patch!
As for Hank, I refused to watch him destroy you. I refused to watch him ruin any chance you had at happiness by making you carry around those memories. You're right. He kidnapped you because he thought he could use you to control me. He took you away at the end of June and didn't bring you back until September. Every day during those months you were locked up and left by yourself. Even the most hardened soldiers can break in solitary confinement, and Hank knew that was my greatest fear. He demanded I show my willingness to spy for him, even though I'd sworn an oath. He dangled you over me every minute of those months.
Patch's eyes glittered with a hardened edge.
He'll pay for that, and on my terms,
he said in a low, deadly voice that sent a chill up my spine.
That night in the shed, he had us surrounded, he continued. The only thing on my mind was keeping him from killing you on the spot. If I'd been alone in the shed, I would have fought. I didn't trust you to handle a fight, and I've regretted it ever since. I couldn't handle seeing you hurt, and it blinded me. I underestimated everything you'd already been through and grown stronger because of. Hank knew that, and I played right into his hands. I laid a deal on the table. I told him I'd be his spy if he'd let you live. He accepted, then called in his Nephilim men to take you away. I fought as hard as I could, Angel. They were mangled by the time they managed to drag you away. I met Hank 4 days later and offered to let him tear out my wings if he'd release you. It was the last thing I had to bargain with, and he agreed to hand you over, but the best I could get out of him was by the end of summer. During the next 3 months, I searched tirelessly for you, but Hank had planned for that as well. He went to great lengths to keep your location secret. I caught and tortured several of his men, but none of them could tell me where you were. I'd be surprised if Hank told more than one or two hand-picked men he assigned to make sure your basic needs were met. A week before Hank released you, he sent one of his Nephilim messengers to find me. The messenger smugly informed me that Hank intended to erase your memory once he let you go, and did I have any objections? I wiped the smirk off his face. Then I dragged him, bloody and battered, to Hank's home.
We were waiting for Hank when he left for work the next morning. I told him if he wanted to avoid looking like his messenger, he would erase your memory far back enough that you'd never have flashbacks. I didn't want you to have a single memory of me, and I didn't want you waking up with nightmares of being locked up and completely alone for days on end. I didn't want you screaming out in the night without knowing why. I wanted to give you back as much of a life as I could. I knew the only way to keep you safe was to keep you out of everything. Then I told Hank to never lay eyes on you again. I made it clear that if he crossed paths with you, I would hunt him down and mutilate his body beyond recognition, and then I would find a way to kill him no matter the cost. I thought he was smart enough to hold up his end of the bargain until you'd told me he's hooked up with your mom. Instinct tells me this isn't just about his amorous affections. He's up to something, and whatever it is, he's using your mom, or more likely you, to accomplish it. My heart pounded in double time. That snake! Patch laughed grimly. I would have used a stronger word, but that works too. How could Hank do those things to me? Obviously, he'd chosen not to love me, but he was still my father. Didn't blood mean anything? How did he have the audacity to look me in the eye these past few days and smile? He'd ripped me away from my mom. He'd held me captive for weeks, and now he dared step inside my home and act as though he cared about my family? He has an endgame in all of this. I don't know what it is, but it can't be harmless. Instinct tells me he wants his plan put into motion before Cheshvan. Patch's eyes sliced to mine. Cheshvan begins in less than 3 weeks. I know what you're thinking, I said, that you're going after him alone. But don't rob me of the satisfaction of bringing him down. I deserve that much. Patch hooked his elbow around my neck and pressed his lips fiercely to my forehead. I wouldn't dream of it. So what now? He's had a head start, but I plan on evening the score. Your enemy's enemy is your friend, and I have an old friend who might be useful to us. Something about the way he said friend implied that the person in question was anything but. Her name is Dabria, and I think it's time I gave her a call. It seemed Patch had decided his next move, and so had I. I swung out of bed and scooped up my shoes and pullover, which he'd laid out on the dresser. I can't stay here. I have to go home. I can't let Hank use my mom this way and not tell her what's going on. Patch let out a troubled sigh. You can't tell her anything. She won't believe you. He's doing the same thing to her that I did to V. Even if she didn't want to trust him, she has to. She's under his influence, and for now we have to leave it that way. A little longer, until I can figure out what he's planning. My resentment boiled up, flaring at the very thought of Hank controlling and manipulating my mom. Can't you march over there and tear him to shreds? I demanded. He deserves a lot worse, but at least it would solve our problems, and give me some satisfaction, I added bitterly. We need to bring him down for good. We don't know who else is helping him and how far his plan extends. He's assembling a Nephilim army to go against fallen angels, but he knows as well as I do that once Cheshvan starts, no army is strong enough to defy an oath sworn under heaven. Fallen angels will sweep in by the droves and possess his men. He must be planning something else. But where do you fit in? He pondered aloud. Suddenly his eyes narrowed. Whatever he's planning, it all hangs on information he needs from the Archangel. But to get her to talk, he needs an Archangel's necklace. Patch's words seemed to smack me. I'd been so caught up in the rest of the night's revelations I'd completely forgotten the hallucination of the caged girl, which I now knew was a real memory. She wasn't a girl, but an archangel. Patch sighed. I'm sorry, Angel. I'm getting ahead of myself. Let me explain. But I cut him off. I know about the necklace. I saw the caged archangel in one of your memories, and I'm pretty sure she tried to tell me to make sure Hank doesn't get it. But at the time, I thought I was hallucinating. Patch watched me in silence for a moment, then spoke. She's an archangel and powerful enough to insert herself into your conscious thought. Clearly she felt it necessary to warn you. I nodded. Because Hank thinks I have your necklace. You don't have it. Try telling him that. That's what this is about, Patch said slowly. Hank thinks I planted my necklace on you. I think so. Patch frowned, his dark eyes calculating. If I take you home, can you face Hank and convince him you've got nothing to hide? I need you to make him believe nothing has changed. This night never happened. No one blames you if you aren't ready, least of all me. But first I need to know you can handle this. My answer to his question came without hesitation. I could keep a secret, no matter how difficult, when the people I loved hung in the balance. Chapter 22. I set my foot heavy on the Volkswagen's gas pedal, hoping my route didn't intersect with a bored cop who had nothing better to do than slap my wrist. I was on my way home, having left Patch with great reluctance. I hadn't wanted to leave, but the thought of my mom alone with Hank, a puppet under his influence, was unbearable. Even though I knew it wasn't solid logic, I told myself my presence could protect her. The alternative was giving in to Hank and I'd die before I went there. After dishonorably trying and failing to convince me to stay until a normal waking hour, Patch had taken me to retrieve the Volkswagen. I didn't know what it said about the car that it managed to sit unscathed in the industrial district for several hours. At the very least, I'd expected the CD player to have been ripped out. At the farmhouse, I jogged up the porch steps and let myself in quietly. When I flipped on the kitchen light, I smothered a scream. Hank Miller leaned against the counter, a glass of water dangling negligently between his fingers. "Hello, Nora." I instantly threw up a shield, hiding evidence of my alarm. I narrowed my eyes, hoping the gesture appeared annoyed. "What are you doing here?" He inclined his head toward the front door. "Your mother had to run to the office. Some emergency Hugo sprang on her at the last moment. It's 5 in the morning. You know Hugo." "No, but I know you," I wanted to say. I briefly entertained the idea that Hank had mind-tricked my mom into leaving so he could corner me alone. But how could he have known when I'd come home? Still, I didn't discard the idea. "I thought it only polite to get up and start my day, too," he said. "What would it say about me if I stayed in bed while your mother works?" He didn't bother to hide that he'd slept here. As far as I knew, this was the first time. It was one thing to manipulate my mom's mind, but to sleep in her bed. "Thought you had plans to sleep at your friend V's house. Party's over so soon," Hank asked. "Or should I say, so late?" My pulse jumped with rage, and I had to bite back the angry words flying to my tongue. I decided to sleep in my own bed. Take a hint. A condescending smile hovered at his mouth. "Right." "Don't believe me?" I challenged. "No need to make excuses with me, Nora. I know there are very few reasons a young girl would feel compelled to lie about sleeping over at a friend's house." He chuckled, but it wasn't a warm sound. "Tell me, who's the lucky guy?" A blonde eyebrow arched, and he raised the glass to his lips, tipping back a drink. My pulse was all over the place, but I put every ounce of conviction into faking an air of calm. He was stabbing in the dark. There was no way he could know I'd been with Patch. The only way Hank was going to confirm anything I'd done last night was if I let him. I gave him an incensed look. "Actually, I was watching a movie with V. Maybe Marcy has a history of sneaking out with boys, but I think it's safe to say I'm not Marcy." Too snide. If I was going to get through this, I needed to back off slightly. Hank's superior amusement didn't fade from his expression. "Oh, really?" "Yeah, really. I called V's mother to check up on you, and she delivered shocking news. You hadn't stepped foot inside their house all night." "You checked up on me?" "I fear your mother is too lenient with you, Nora. I saw through your fib and thought I'd take matters into my own hands. I'm glad we ran into each other, so we could have this little chat privately." "What I do is none of your business." "At the moment, true. But if I marry your mother, all the old rules go out the window. We'll be a family." He winked, but the effect was far more menacing than playful. "I run a tight ship, Nora." "Okay, try this on for size." "You're right, I wasn't at V's. I lied to my mom so I could go for a long, undisturbed drive in the country to clear my head. Something strange has been happening lately." I tapped my head. "My amnesia is starting to clear. The past several months don't feel quite so vague. I keep seeing one particular face over and over. My kidnappers. I don't have enough detail to identify him yet, but it's only a matter of time." He held his face perfectly expressionless, but I thought I saw anger swell in his eyes. "That's what I thought, you abominable prick." "Trouble was, on my way back into town, my piece of junk car broke down. I didn't want to get in trouble for driving around by myself late at night, so I called V and asked her to cover for me. I've spent the past few hours trying to get my car to start." He didn't flinch.
Why don't I have a look at it, then? If I can't figure out what's wrong with it, I shouldn't be in the car business.
Don't bother. I'll take it to our mechanic. In case he didn't catch the hint, I added, I need to get ready for school and I need to get some studying done. I prefer peace and quiet.
His smile pinched at the corners. If I didn't know better, I'd think you were trying to get rid of me.
I gestured pointedly toward the front door. I'll call my mom and let her know you left.
And your car?
My, my, he was being obstinate. Mechanic, remember?
Nonsense, he said, brushing me off easily. No need to make your mother pay a mechanic when I can solve the problem.
Car's in the driveway, I presume. Before I could stop him, he walked out the front door. I followed him down the front porch steps with my heart in my throat. Positioning himself at the nose of the Volkswagen, he rolled up his sleeves and reached expertly inside the front grille. The hood popped up, and he propped it open. I stood beside him, hoping Patch had done a convincing job. It had been his idea to have a backup plan, just in case V's story didn't hold. Since it looked like Hank had overridden Patch's mind trick by going straight to Mrs. Sky, I couldn't be more grateful for his caution.
Right here, Hank said, pointing to a tiny fissure in one of the many black hoses coiled around the engine. Problem solved. It'll hold for a few more days, but it's going to need fixing sooner rather than later. Bring it by the dealership later today, and I'll get my men on it.
When I said nothing, he added,
I have to impress the daughter of the woman I intend to marry.
It was said lightly enough, but there was a sinister undertone.
Oh, and Nora, he called out after I'd turned to go. I'm happy to keep this incident to ourselves, but for your mother's sake, I won't tolerate more lies, regardless of your intentions. Fool me once.
Without a word, I walked inside, forcing myself not to hurry or glance back. Not that I needed to. I could feel Hank's perceptive frown follow me all the way through the door. A week passed without any word from Patch. I didn't know if he'd found Dobria or if he was any closer to uncovering Hank's motivation for hanging around my family. More than once I'd had to stop myself from driving to Delphic and using trial and error to track my way back to his granite studio. I'd agreed to wait for him to contact me, but I was beginning to kick myself for doing so. I'd made Patch promise not to abandon me to the sidelines while he went after Hank, but his promise was starting to look awfully flimsy. Even if he'd hit nothing but dead ends, I wanted him to call because he missed me the way I was missing him. Couldn't he be bothered to pick up the phone? Scott also hadn't resurfaced, and in keeping with his request, I hadn't gone looking for him. But if one or both didn't reach out soon, all bets were off. The only thing distracting me from Patch was school, but even it wasn't doing a commendable job. I'd always considered myself a top-notch student, though I was starting to wonder why I bothered. Compared to the immediate need to deal with Hank, getting into college felt like a secondary concern.
Congratulations,
Sherry Dearborn said as we strolled into second-hour English together. I couldn't figure out why she was smiling so widely.
For what?
Homecoming nominations were posted this morning. You're up for junior class attendant.
I just stared at her.
Junior class attendant,
she repeated, stressing each word individually.
Are you sure? Your name's on the list. Can't be a misprint.
Who would nominate me? She eyed me oddly.
Anyone can nominate you, but they have to get at least 50 other people to sign the nomination form, like a petition. The more signatures, the better.
I'm going to kill V, I muttered as the only logical explanation presented itself. I'd taken Patch's advice and hadn't called her out on lying to me, but this was inexcusable. Homecoming royalty? Even Patch couldn't protect her now. Seated at my desk, I hid my cell phone beneath the desktop since our teacher, Mr. Sarif, had a strict no-phone policy. Homecoming attendant? I texted to V. Fortunately, the bell hadn't rung yet, and she gave me a prompt reply.
Just heard. Congrats?
You are so dead, I punched in.
Excusez-moi? You think I did this?
Better put that away, said a cheerful voice. Sarif is squinting at you.
Marcy Miller dropped into the next desk over. I knew we had English together, but she always sat in the back row with John Galla and Addison Hales. It was no secret Mr. Sarif was practically blind, and they could do just about anything back there short of lighting up.
If he squints any harder, he's going to give himself a brain hemorrhoid, Marcy said.